day again, medical education podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief, and I am today talking with senior lecturer Vivian Cook, who's at the Barts and the London Queen Mary University of London in the Centre for Medical Education, and we're going to discuss a paper that she has coming out in the June issue of Medical Education entitled Supporting Students with Disability and Health Issues, Lowering the Social Barriers. Welcome to the podcast, Vivian.
Oh, well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. I enjoyed the paper, and it's nice to be able to talk from one soggy city to another, knowing that we're sharing some of the same weather patterns and wet feet.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely a case of April showers here in London.
Yeah, we're suffering the same in Vancouver quite dramatically the last couple of days. This has been a bit of an inclusivity morning for me. I just finished recording a podcast with another author about issues of trying to support individuals from different ethnic backgrounds in their medical school, and I understand you've been spending quite a bit of time trying to determine how to support those with disability or other health issues. Is this a dominant aspect of your role at Barts in the London?
My role really is to support and evaluate some of the education initiatives that are going on. And my colleagues have developed this student support card, which I'll tell you a little bit more about in a moment. And they really asked me to be involved in evaluating it and doing some educational research around it. It's certainly something that I think is a really important issue. And I was just really interested to get involved with it. And in fact, I'm still working with these colleagues and we're thinking about other areas allied to this, which we may go on and look at. So I'm very much a general educational researcher with an interest in this area.
Okay. So just before we do get into the question of what these student support cards are and what your focus has been, the adjustments and accommodations that schools want to make for individuals with disabilities or other health issues is quite variable across the world. And so I wonder if I can ask you to speak for a couple minutes just about what the guidelines are for institutions in the UK and why this was thought to be an important step in the first place.
Okay, well, in the UK, certainly we've had equality legislation in regards to disability really for the last, more than the last 10 years, and it's very much a kind of part and parcel of the whole scene in terms of medical education and medical schools. The GMC, the General Medical Council in particular, set out guidance for medical schools in applying what was this legislation, and the term they used was around reasonable adjustments. And the kind of context or the framework is that you can think of disability in different ways, and disability could be seen as a problem of the individual. And a lot of history around disability has been very much in that vein, where the impairment of the individual is seen as the problem. And what's happened is that definition has begun to change. And we now talk much more about a social model of disability, which is that the problem, if you like, is with society or with the institution in placing unnecessary barriers or social barriers to progress and learning. So that model of disability, which is enshrined in law and legislation here, was taken up by the General Medical Council, and guidance was provided to medical schools, practical examples of how students could be enabled, how their progression could be supported by reasonable adjustments, by things which students could expect to happen and which medical schools could facilitate. And the reason for that and that focus, I think, was when you look at the proportion of people with disabilities in the population, it's much higher than the proportion of medical students with disabilities in medical schools. So something was happening through the process of selection or progression and so on that really this needed to be addressed. So the student support card was one way of doing that.
Yeah, and so this card, as I understand it, is literally a card that students are able to carry around with them so that they can more readily make it known to their lecturers, their professors, that there is an issue they need to be aware of. Is that right?
That's exactly it. It's a very simple laminated card, which says, not always, but what the nature of the disability or health issue is and what the reasonable adjustment might be. And the real, I think, success of the card is that it's the wording on the card is negotiated with the student and the dean or whoever actually provides the card. So the student is completely happy about the level of disclosure and information that's actually on the card. And that kind of ties with the General Medical Council and the disability legislation, which is reasonable adjustments need to be on a case-by-case basis. So they need to be individualized and tailor-made.
Just by way of elaboration a little bit, I don't mean to be in any way disrespectful, but I have this image in my mind of like a scarlet letter, this card hanging off of a student's chest and potentially creating stigma. I presume it's a bit more subtle in its use, and wonder if you could tell us what the expectations are with respect to how a student shares the card and how professors expected to respond to it.
Well, that's interesting because that's one of the things that we asked the students. We did a survey, as you know, and then we actually did some interviews. And the students, it's entirely up to them whether or not they use the card. So it's something they can have on them and they choose their moment when they think it's appropriate. And one of the things we really explored is what triggers those moments. When do they think it's appropriate? When wouldn't they use the card? And their responses to that were very varied, which just emphasizes the fact it is such an individual thing. By and large, the students would choose their moment. So they found they used the most in examination situations or when they were on the wards, perhaps in situations where it was kind of quite high stakes, was a lot of pressure, and they felt it was important that their needs were recognized. And more often than not, well, in fact, in all cases, they found that the tutor's response was positive to it and they reacted and made adjustments accordingly. Some of the students did worry a little bit about using the card because they felt it might give the impression that they were trying to get out of something or they weren't quite capable of doing something. So in the process of disclosing, it wasn't a kind of neutral thing for them to do. It was something they thought really quite hard about before they did. And one particular student did say she was concerned then that having disclosed, there may be negative feelings or negative impressions left. But by and large, that didn't happen.
You're raising issues for me that I think come up quite routinely. You know, when you're on the faculty side, you can often hear the cynicism that some will express about whether some individuals might be using these things as a way of getting out of having to do things the way other students are doing it. And it sounds to me like your data suggests that the people who were legitimately in these situations of having health issues were very sensitive to those things and as a result want to make sure to not take advantage of it. Is that a fair perception?
That's exactly it. The students were very judicious about when they used the card. They really thought very hard about, do I really need to ask for this reasonable adjustment at this point in time? So we had no evidence at all of them trying to use the card to miss things. And in fact, one of their concerns in using the card, quite aside from the kind of impressions it might give or that it might be received negatively, is that they very much had in their mind that they might be missing out on things. So if they didn't do a particular skill or a particular procedure or attend a particular session, they would miss out and not cover all the things that they would need to do in order to become a competent practitioner. So that point of using the card was something we felt the students thought really long and hard about. And there was a lot of weighing up of pros and cons from their perspective.
And so what sort of safety nets are put in place from the program's perspective to ensure that individuals are graduating only if they've had the opportunities and had the success of developing the competencies that are necessary to practice well?
The answer to that, I think, is these students still have to pass the same exams, undergo the same clinical examinations, have the same logbooks to complete. So I think the scheme organisers would say it's about reasonable adjustments that students are then able to complete and progress in the same way as all the other students do.
Right. And one of the more intriguing things I found about the paper, and that was reinforced by the conversation we had before we started recording, was that it sounds as though you started out doing a bit of a program evaluation, just trying to get a sense of whether or not the system was working, and led to some deeper understanding of the complexities of the health issues. And so maybe my last question should be about what has changed for you in your perspective with respect to how these individuals manage to succeed in medical programs as a result of engaging in this work.
I think for me, it's kind of raised the importance of having an intervention like this, having something like the student support card. And though what we found in our research was that the students had them but didn't use them, just owning the card and having it was symbolically important to them. It was a recognition that their needs were being recognised by the medical school. It gave them backup and credibility, and that was really one of the key findings. So I think it's important. I mean, one of my kind of key learning aspects to this really is that it's important to recognise that these students are there within the population, and that it's students who have disabilities, students who have short-term health issues. And it's really important that their needs are in some way recognised. And just the process of recognition is really helpful, quite aside from the reasonable adjustments. So I think as a scheme, it represents a cultural commitment, an institutional commitment, I think, to supporting students with disabilities, which I think goes a long way.
That sounds great. I am very impressed by the efforts that the school is putting forward to manage these situations and support these students. And as much as I promised that would be my last question, I can't resist the urge to ask how it's evolving or what you see as the next phase for either the research side or the student support card strategy itself.
Yeah, well, the student support card is still alive and well, and they're certainly, again, this year being issued to students for a whole kind of variety of reasons. One of the things that we didn't look at, and we didn't have time to look at, and I think it's quite important, is reflecting something you said earlier, which is really about tutors' perceptions of the card and how it's used. And also their ability to know and to think about how you make reasonable adjustments, because I think in some cases it may be pretty obvious and spelled out, but in other cases tutors might not be quite sure about what's appropriate and what's not. So I think there's another piece of research certainly around tutors' perceptions.
Right. Well, I'll look forward to that and would be very intrigued to see which aspects align and which ones don't align between student and tutor perceptions, and wish you the best of luck with carrying that on.
Okay. Well, yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And I'll just remind the listeners before we sign off that I've been speaking with Vivian Cook, who's senior lecturer at Barts in the London, Queen Mary University of London Centre for Medical Education. And the paper we've been discussing is in the June 2012 issue of Medical Education, entitled Supporting Students with Disability and Health Issues, Lowering the Social Barriers. Thanks again, Vivian, and congratulations on this interesting work and clear success you're having with supporting these students who are, I'm sure, very grateful for all of the opportunities and efforts that you're putting forward.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.